This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, should the Obama administration rethink its use of drones and targeted killing as key tools in its counterterrorism strategy? Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. In January, a U.S. counterterrorism operation accidentally killed two hostages, one American aid worker and one Italian man, held by al-Qaeda on the Afghan-Pakistan border. The White House recently disclosed that the hostages were killed during an airstrike by unmanned drone aircraft. The CIA didn't detect the presence of the two hostages at the compound before launching the strike. U.S. President Barack Obama personally apologized for the incident, saying he deeply regretted what happened. Will the recent tragic accident that resulted in the death of U.S. aid worker Warren Weinstein trigger a more in-depth review of the use of drones as a tactic in an overall strategy to combat terrorism? What lessons have we learned from the use of drones as counterterrorism tools? Do their successes outweigh their drawbacks? And is the Obama administration relying too heavily on the use of drones in lieu of developing a more robust, multidimensional counterterrorism strategy? And what happened to the promises made by President Obama in 2013 when he vowed to ensure more congressional oversight, even the establishment of a special court that could review proposed counterterrorism strikes? Well, for answers to these questions and to discuss the impact of the recent tragedy that took the lives of Warren Weinstein and Giovanni Loporto, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Lisa Curtis is a senior research fellow at the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. That's a Washington-based think tank. She's a frequent analyst at these VOA microphones. And Robert Wirth, he's a public policy scholar in the Middle East program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. That's a policy group also based here in Washington. And previously, Robert Wirth was Beirut bureau chief for the New York Times, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, In the Caliph's Shadow. And both guests join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Lisa Curtis, let me turn to you first and talk about this terrible accident and what it may or may not portend for a review of policy regarding the use of drones. What effect is this accident having on the administration in terms of rethinking the use of drones?
Well, first, let me just state what a horrific tragedy this was. Warren Weinstein was well known, well respected for his humanitarian work in Pakistan, and we all are mourning his death. And I think there are legitimate questions that need to be answered. How could this have happened? How do we avoid this in the future? And the CIA certainly needs to review its procedures and protocols with the drone program. Look, there's no denying the drones have helped us reduce al-Qaeda's capabilities. They have helped us disrupt their ability to plot, plan, and train for attacks against the U.S. and other countries. But I think there is a need to consider some of the aspects of the program, and in particular, the so-called signature strikes, which are basically the CIA is allowed to strike at militants whose activities bear the signature of al-Qaeda militants. They don't know the exact identities of the targets, but they're allowed to take these strikes. And what's interesting, in 2013, when President Obama reviewed the drone strategy and announced there would be some changes, the program in Pakistan was exempted from many of these changes. So I think now there will be questions asked whether Pakistan still should be exempted in some of these ways. For instance, in other countries, there has to be an imminent danger coming from the targets. In Pakistan, the imminent danger requirement is not there. So I think they will have to review, do some changes need to be made, particularly the way drones are conducted in Pakistan.
Well, I'd also like to add my deep condolences to the Weinstein family, because I actually knew Warren Weinstein personally myself, and it's a great tragedy. Well, turning to you, Robert Wirth, to get your take on how this terrible tragedy will affect the administration's review of the drone policy.
Well, I think one of the things worth considering is that I think the Obama administration, to some extent, helped to create this problem by talking so much in recent years about how this was a super precise weapon, that there were almost no civilian casualties. And it's turned out that there are. This is probably the most dramatic example, because we've got an American aid worker killed. But there have been now 8 American citizens total killed by drones, and only one of those people was actually being targeted. Of course, two of them were members of Al-Qaeda, who they might well have wanted to target anyway, in January, that is. Some of the other ones earlier were as well. But those people were not being targeted in the strike. It was a surprise when that happened. Also, there have been a whole lot of civilians killed in Yemen. And as far as we know, despite what was said in 2013 about reviewing the program and making it more transparent, there have been a number of civilian casualties since then. There was a recent study by the Open Society Institute that at least 26 innocent people, civilians, were killed between 2012 and 2014 in Yemen. So there are all kinds of questions about this program, and I think one of the first steps might be to make it a little bit clearer who has been killed, who's a non-combatant. There are other issues as well, for instance, compensation. Some people have said that even if the program continues being administered exactly as it is now, that it would be helpful and would reduce some of the negative publicity that comes out in these countries if we at least acknowledged and apologized when these people are killed. And that has happened to some extent, but in a very undercover way.
Well, Robert Wirth brings up many good points that underscore some of the shortcomings of the drone strategy. Well, back to you, Lisa Curtis, because you brought up signature strikes, and I want to pursue that because you rightly said we have signature strikes and then, of course, the more targeted strikes. And one thing you mentioned as well, in 2013, I was not aware that the program in Pakistan was exempted. So talk about whether or not signature strikes in general should continue in light of this terrible tragedy and others that Robert said, innocent people have been killed, and that it undermines the good that the strategy does produce with respect to, as you said, disrupting Al-Qaeda. Talk about where you think the policy on signature strikes should go, both with respect to the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan and other countries.
Well, I think certainly there should be consideration given to the fact if we know that Al-Qaeda is holding hostages, for instance. I think they are going to have to factor that in to the drone program. This shows tragedy shows exactly that. So that's one issue, I think, the fact of if we know hostages are being held, we may not know exactly where they are, but if we know that Al-Qaeda has them somewhere in these areas, that is going to have to be a consideration when these drone operations are taken. But I do want to say they're not 100% precise, the drones, but they're pretty good. And we've seen through the media reporting that in this case, they actually used heat sensors to try to determine if there were additional people in the compound. And in general, I think that technology has been effective. But in this case, they did not pick up that there were additional people. And they think they may have been hidden underground or something like that. So I think that all precautions are used to avoid civilian casualties. And yes, there have been civilian casualties. Robert talked about some of those in Yemen. We do know in Pakistan as well. The numbers, not so clear because of the nature of the program being classified. We don't know the numbers. And that's been a source of contention here in Washington. Some of the human rights organizations think the number's a lot higher. The U.S. government thinks that their assessment is that they're much lower than some of the organizations saying. But this is part of the problem of not having transparency in the program. But, you know, I think that, yes, the signature strikes will have to be looked at and considered. But, you know, part of the problem is they have found that the signature strikes have generally eliminated senior Al-Qaeda leaders. They have gotten pretty good at being able to identify Al-Qaeda. And so I think that this is going to be a tough balancing act. But one issue that when we're talking about this tragedy of the hostages being killed is we need to look at what was done to try to free Warren Weinstein by the U.S. government and in cooperation with the Pakistan government. We know he was picked up in August 2011, a time of very high tensions between the U.S. and Pakistan, just a few months after the bin Laden raid. So one of the questions is, did the U.S. government do enough to try to free him, you know, in those few years that he was held hostage? And do we need a hostage czar? Do we need somebody who is just focused solely on freeing Americans who are taken hostage? Because believe me, this won't be the last time an American is taken hostage.
Well, Lisa Curtis, you bring up a couple of issues we want to pursue, which I will. But first, let me turn to Robert Wirth and just ask you briefly, Robert, with respect to signature strikes, these strikes that target a lot of people, many of whom are very dangerous terrorists. What is your view? Is it time to outlaw signature strikes altogether? or dramatically diminish their implementation?
Well, it's a tough question. I think so much of the information that goes into the decisions about who to hit with a drone and who not is, it's all entirely classified. So as an outside critic, it's difficult to be precise about this. I think the evidence in Yemen suggests that they are casting perhaps slightly too wide a net. But I also think a little bit more openness would really help. It's interesting that, at least you mentioned that these are indeed, as you say, very precise. And if you speak to Yemeni, once you get to know them, let's say, once they're being really open with you, they will say, yes, you know, these are much more precise, certainly much more precise than the Yemeni military would be in its operations. I mean, those have killed a lot of people in some really terrifying circumstances. And I think the trouble is that these are often seen, these drone strikes, as an infringement on sovereignty. It's perceived as an insult. So it's very easy for people to gin up a kind of a political campaign against these strikes, which, of course, Al-Qaeda is keen to help out.
It's perceived as an insult primarily by the people, not necessarily by the governments, because presumably they're working in concert with the United States. At least in Yemen, it was when the government was still in power.
That's right. People, Yemeni people, whatever their political persuasion, feel, understandably, that there's, you know, here's this foreign power that is firing weapons from the sky and killing people who, most Yemenis, are pleased that Al-Qaeda people are being taken out. But they're very upset, obviously, about the civilian casualties. So I just think a little bit more openness about this would really help. I think going in with the attitude, well, these only kill Al-Qaeda people, is bound to make people more upset and a sense of hypocrisy when civilians are, in fact, killed.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Lisa Curtis. She's a senior research fellow at the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation, a Washington-based think tank, and Robert Wirth, from whom you just heard. He's a public policy scholar in the Middle East program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. That's a policy group based here in Washington. We're talking about the pros and cons of drones as a counterterrorism tool in the wake of the inadvertent deaths of two high-profile hostages in Pakistan. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA and connect with us on Facebook. And we also want to hear from you. Please send an email to encounter@voanews.com. Here's a shout out to a longtime loyal listener, Dalhatu Sab. Well, back to you, Lisa Curtis, to pursue a question that you brought up, and that's with regard to, was enough done to free Warren Weinstein before this horrible tragedy, and to what extent the U.S. administration is looking into that? And, of course, you brought up this question of some kind of a so-called hostage czar, because many of the families of hostages, whether it's Warren Weinstein or others who were killed by the so-called Islamic State, are getting inconsistent information from different parts of the administration. We understand that the Obama administration has a task force now dealing with a review of policy on hostages, and it's reportedly prepared to make some recommendations that families of hostages be free to pay ransom. Again, these are some reports we're hearing. What are your thoughts regarding which way the administration is going regarding how to deal with hostages and their families?
Well, this is an interesting question for me. I actually have had firsthand experience working a hostage situation when I was posted in Pakistan in 1995. This was a Kashmiri militant group had taken five people hostage, including an American, Donald Hutchings, and I spent the better part of 9 months trying to work for his release. So I've had experience with this, and what I've seen is it's really important to keep up that communication with the families and to be able to provide as much information as you can. So that's the first thing. But the second thing to keep in mind is the families then have to make a decision whether they rely solely on the U.S. government to try to free their loved one or whether they take matters into their own hands. And it seems in the case of Warren Weinstein that perhaps the family had tried to establish direct contact with the kidnappers and may have even paid a ransom. So I think that, yes, the families need to be able to take their own decisions about how they want to handle the situation. But the U.S. government, I think, does need to have somebody or, you know, a group of people that are focused solely on hostage situations. That is what they are responsible for. Because I think what we find is that in the State Department, perhaps they're focused on the diplomacy, the overall relationship with the country where the hostage was taken. So that poses some obstacles. Or the CIA, which, you know, generally their priority is not in freeing hostages. They have other issues that they're dealing with. The FBI is mainly a domestic organization. So what you see is nobody really taking full responsibility. And then it comes to however energized the official on the ground who's tasked with handling the situation, rather than having a very senior person back in Washington who's kind of overseeing the effort to try to free the hostage. So I certainly support this review of how we deal with hostage situations, and my hope is that we do come up with better program and we do prioritize the issue, because it's not going away with ISIS, with Al-Qaeda. This is something that the U.S. government is going to have to prioritize.
Indeed. In terms of, quickly before I turn to Robert, paying ransom for hostages, if it's just the families doing it and not involving the government, should that be condoned or just?
I think the U.S. government should take a neutral position on what the families decide they want to do. Certainly, I'm sure the U.S. government would counsel against this. From the U.S. perspective, paying ransom for hostages only encourages more innocents to be kidnapped. So there's a lot of good reasons to have that as a U.S. government policy. But I'm simply saying that perhaps the families should not be castigated for taking their individual decisions and how they want to move forward.
We're turning to you, Robert Wirth. We read a report this week in the Wall Street Journal saying that the FBI helped facilitate a 2012 ransom payment to Al-Qaeda from the family of the kidnapped aid worker Warren Weinstein in an unsuccessful bid, obviously, to secure his release. And the FBI's previously undisclosed role reveals a contradiction in that longstanding U.S. policy against paying ransom for hostages. So again, what is your view with respect to this policy? Should the policy change, and what do you recommend that the U.S. government do regarding, on the one hand, how to deal with hostages and their families, and in terms of paying ransom?
Well, I certainly agree that the U.S. should make sure its house is in order with regard to the way it deals with this, that we have a unified message. You know, you can't have, in one situation, in Syria, government officials essentially threatening the families with arrest or prosecution if they get involved in this kind of negotiation, and then the FBI essentially helping to facilitate a payment by Warren Weinstein's family. But I think actually the bigger problem is not with the way the Americans handle this, but with Europe, where large ransom payments are routinely made, even as the governments of those countries deny that they're making them. And that has been a significant and rising source of revenue for a number of different Al-Qaeda franchises. In North Africa, I think, was the one that sort of pioneered this. They kidnapped a number of Europeans and got many millions of dollars out of that. But the Yemen Al-Qaeda franchise has also made tens of millions of dollars out of this, sometimes directly from European countries and sometimes through intermediaries and through Arab governments. And I think, again, you know, it's who knows what is actually already happening on this front. But if it's not already happening, I think it would be worth the United States trying to lead on this issue internationally and to try to get a more unified position that doesn't lead to more funding of Al-Qaeda.
Back to you, Lisa Curtis, on the jurisdiction of the program, whether it's this under the CIA or the Defense Department. There seems to be a debate over whether or not perhaps it should move over under the Defense Department, where perhaps there would be more transparency, a point that Robert Wirth brought up. Given what happened, should there be more transparency, in your view, as President Obama promised, and more oversight? And in that regard, is there an argument to be made for the program to be under the jurisdiction of the Department of Defense?
Well, look, 2 years ago in 2013, when President Obama announced some changes to the drone program, this issue came up, and there was a lot of people pushing for the program to move to DOD to be more transparent. But what they found was that the program was effective under the CIA, and that there were going to be a lot of challenges with moving it to DOD. So it simply didn't happen. So I'm not a big supporter of moving the program, even though I support more transparency on civilian casualties and communicating with families when these kinds of mistakes happen, even compensating families. I support transparency in that regard. But in terms of the targeting and how it's done, then I think you're starting to impinge on U.S. capabilities. You're giving the enemy, you know, information, which is going to help the enemy. So I don't think that, you know, some of these calls for moving the program to DOD and, you know, being public about the specific ways the program is conducted, I don't think that's entirely realistic.
Robert Wirth, do you have an opinion with respect to whether or not the program should move over to the Defense Department in the hopes there would be more transparency?
I don't know enough about the ins and outs of those bureaucracies to really say. I mean, I know that the CIA has been pretty adamant about maintaining control of the program. I completely agree with Lisa that there's no need to be more transparent about. I think it's impossible for them to be more transparent about the way that strikes are cooked up. It's really just a matter of once a mistake has been made, being open about that. And I don't see why that couldn't happen under the CIA, although no doubt there are legal issues involved. If you don't mind, there's one other issue that I think is worth raising in this context, which is that at least in Yemen, and I suspect the same is true in Pakistan, the United States is sometimes very much beholden to other countries' intelligence agencies for getting its information about these strikes, whether they're signature strikes or more precise strikes, because we don't have the people on the ground to do that. This is particularly true now in Yemen when we just sent out, you know, the people that we did have there. Even when we did have people there, there weren't enough, really. And it was a sort of a joint program with Yemenis, Saudis, Americans, and possibly other countries as well being involved. But as far as the human intelligence, you know, we were very much dependent on our partners for that. And I think that is tricky because those other countries, I'm thinking here particularly of Saudi Arabia, may have very different motives. The standards are clear, at least as far as Obama set them out in 2013, that this, you know, these people who are being targeted have to pose a direct threat to the United States. Well, the Saudis have very good reasons, obviously, for targeting people who may be no threat to the United States, but are a very serious threat to Saudi Arabia. After all, the chief target of the Yemen-based al-Qaeda group is not the United States, it's Saudi Arabia. And so we don't know whether perhaps they're massaging the data in order to hit some people who in fact, are their enemies and not ours.
And you're worried that the United States would, because we don't have our own people, that we would be persuaded by their intelligence and
exactly. We don't have the ability to be entirely sure to confirm that stuff. You know, they're providing the intelligence. My assumption, again, a lot of this is unfortunately has to be speculative because it's a secret program, but my assumption is that we just don't have the ability to double check all that.
Lisa Curtis, what do you think about that?
I think the same challenges apply in Pakistan, in the case of Pakistan. And what's interesting, even though you have objections by the Pakistani public against the drone program, the same concerns about infringing on Pakistani sovereignty, I think Pakistani officials in private would admit that the drone programs have helped them. Drones have taken out two major leaders of the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, which, of course, attacks the Pakistani state. But I think that, you know, that is a concern. And, you know, in particular, these strikes that, you know, resulted in the deaths of the hostages, as well as all of the strikes, I think, you know, we need to be sure about where the information is coming from and ensuring that there aren't agendas from the people who are providing the information. And we know in the case of Pakistan that they aren't always on board with our counterterrorism goals, and they still maintain a policy of fighting some terrorists and supporting others, which makes them a very difficult partner to work with.
Lisa Curtis, if drones are indeed an important tool in the counterterrorism strategy, but certainly it's a tactic and not necessarily a strategy. Many people are criticizing President Obama because he seems to be relying too heavily on the use of drones, much more so than his predecessor, George W. Bush. Do you think Obama is relying too heavily on this tactic to the detriment of crafting a more robust and multi-pronged counterterrorism strategy?
Well, the drone program in Pakistan has been greatly reduced. If you look at the number of drone strikes that were taken from about 2010 to 2012, an enormous number. That has gone down significantly. I think there's been about 20 drone strikes this year, and there were even less last year. So I think when it comes to Pakistan and targeting al-Qaeda core, the Obama administration is relying less on the drone program. But I do think you make an important point that we have to realize that the drones are a tool, they're not a strategy. And we need a very comprehensive strategy to deal with this increasingly complex and dangerous terrorist threat that we face now, not only from Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, but also ISIS. And it's going to require sometimes partnering with other countries, bolstering their capabilities to fight terrorists on their own territory. It will involve, at times, U.S. troops on the ground. Of course, we can't be everywhere that the terrorists crop up, but sometimes that will be necessary. It involves engaging in the battle of ideas and taking on the narrative that the terrorists are promoting. So there are a lot of ways that the U.S. is going to need to be engaged. We need a multi-pronged, sort of comprehensive counterterrorism strategy. And yes, my fear was that the Obama administration might tend to favor the drones, you know, sort of a secret program, you know, keeping it out of the public eye, because I think President Obama does want to be remembered as the president that ended two wars. He just, I don't think, wants to be fighting terrorists and fighting these wars. It's not part of his agenda, but the reality is this is what we're up against and this is what we're facing.
Well, Robert Wirth, President Obama certainly doesn't want to be seen as overtly fighting more wars, and probably for him the drone strategy then was a good alternative, but unfortunately it's backfiring because it's becoming now public. And accidents are happening, very tragic ones. So the question to you again, the same one, is do you think that President Obama is perhaps relying too heavily on this tactic to the detriment of crafting a more robust, multi-pronged approach?
I tend to think, yes, he's relying on a little bit too much. But I also have to concede that, you know, I mean, what I tend to say in response to this question is that we ought to be a little bit more imaginative and more aggressive in our diplomacy, that there needs to be, you know, diplomacy is a risky profession, but it's a noble one. And right now is probably a more dangerous time for diplomats than any time in decades in the Middle East. You have a number of failed states and several, you know, raging conflicts, wars going on in the Middle East. But I still think there's a lot of room for American diplomats to make a difference. I think the tricky part is, understandably, after the death of Ambassador Chris Stevens in Libya, there's enormous political pressure not to lose another person like that. Of course, there were four others as well who died with him, Americans. So it's natural, it's understandable for a president who's doing his utmost not only to keep us out of more wars, but also to lose as few Americans as possible, to rely on what seems to be a safer method.
And to close, back to you, Lisa Curtis, where do we go from here? What are the next steps in scrutinizing this strategy in light of the tragedy we've witnessed?
Well, I think that the questions need to be answered. President Obama was very apologetic for this mistake. He took full responsibility for the mistake, which I think was good and the right approach. But I think now we need the follow-up. We need to know exactly what went wrong and how we're going to avoid such mistakes in the future. And I'll come back to the point about prioritizing freeing these American hostages when they are taken and ensuring that we are getting cooperation from the host governments in trying to free the hostages and working closely with the families. So I think those should be the priorities, you know, figuring out what went wrong, how we're going to prevent it in the future, and then how we're going to deal with hostages moving forward.
Well, the last word to you, Robert Wirth, regarding where we go from here in light of this tragedy. What do you expect the administration and Congress are prepared to do?
Well, I suppose in light of this, and also in light of what all of the tragic murders of Americans in Syria, that there's going to be a lot of attention rightly placed on this. And I think it's probably just a matter of tightening up our policies and making sure that they're absolutely consistent and that we are doing everything we can to recover those hostages. And I just would say that it's hard to understate the difficulty of doing something like this. Getting people out of places like Syria and Afghanistan is unimaginably difficult and risky. So I think it's probably more a matter of dealing with the families in a sensible and thoughtful way, but the logistics of retrieving people from situations like that are always going to be profound.
I'm afraid on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Lisa Curtis, Senior Research Fellow at the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation, and Robert Wirth, Public Policy Scholar in the Middle East Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Thanks, both of you, for your terrific insights. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Brian Marcoulier. I'm Carol Castile. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.